Welcome to the Wellsteading Podcast. It's December 9th, 2014. This is episode 53. I'm your host, John Pugliano. I'm also the founder and money manager at investablewealth.com. In each episode, I try and teach you one or more of the 10 wealth-building principles. If you haven't listened to those or you're not familiar with them, go back and listen to the first 10 episodes of this podcast. That's where I lay out the foundation of my nearly 30 years of experience of how I've personally built my own net worth. And as I always like to say, it's not about the money, it's more about the freedom. It's not having the money or the things that we can buy with the money, it's the ability to buy our own freedom and independence and liberty. Money may not buy happiness, but it can buy freedom. Today we're going to talk about the stock markets. They were very volatile. I'll also tell you a little bit about some of the positions and changes I've made to my own portfolio. And one thing in there in particular may be surprising to some of you. Well, if you watch the stock market at all today, you know that early on, there were some bad numbers again coming out of China. Overall, the overall global economy is still very weak. The Europeans aren't easing as much on their money. There's still concerns that they may go into a recession. The Chinese, there's thoughts that they're going to continue pumping more money in because they are definitely slowing down not only in exports but also in importing. And then the Japanese, who knows? Their market goes up and down. It's been on fire, but that's only because they totally devaluated and debased their currency to unbelievable levels. The Japanese yen is now trading around 120 yen to a dollar. It's just, fallen precipitously over the last 2 years or so. It's really unbelievable what they've done. I keep saying this is probably a really good time to go out and buy a Honda or a Toyota. But I'll tell you the interesting thing about the stock market, although I say it was spooked early, it was down most of the day. It really made an amazing recovery. The S&P pretty much closed flat. I think it was down about 0.02%. You can't get much flatter than that. The NASDAQ actually recovered extremely nice and was up over 0.5%. The volatility, again, as I say, it was dramatic. I think the S&P fluctuated intraday about 1.3%. So that's a good move. I mean, it went all the way down, it came down hard, and then it came back up. That's actually what we want to see. If there's going to be volatility, you want to at least see a strong close. A big market recovery like that, there was a lot of volume, a lot of buying in at the end of the day, you know, people coming and buying on the dips. That's what we want to see in a strong market. So if you have to have volatility, if you have to have the market, you know, drop out from under you, at least you want to see it come back and close at the end of the day, either flat or up like it did. So that keeps me optimistic, but I'll tell you, volatile markets are always a time for reflection. If you're like me and you got in about 7 weeks ago on the most recent uptrend, then you've been looking over your portfolio the last week or so, and you're saying, hey, should I take some money off the table? Should I take some profits? Can this thing go on forever? Now, the markets have definitely been driven by optimism with increasing jobs. That's debatable, but it does look like the overall economy is getting better. There are some increases in wages. Now, some people worry about that. They say, oh, well, that means the Fed's going to start tightening. They're going to start raising interest rates. That means we're going to see inflation. You know, but at the same time, we're seeing oil plunged, you know, down. It was at one point below $63. I don't know where it finished at today, but at around $63 a barrel, that's like a 40% drop from what it was over the summer. I mean, that's extraordinary. And that's going to put money back not only in the pockets of consumers so that they're going to buy more consumer products, but it's also going to help companies that are major energy users, right? So just look around. Look in your environment. Look at places that are energy consumers, you know, businesses that use a lot of energy. Their costs have just gone down. They just got a price break. They'll be passing that on to their consumers, to their customers. So there you'll see deflation. I think that's going to offset any inflation we may be seeing in the job market. So for now, I'm not really calling on the Federal Reserve to drastically, or even for that matter, raise interest rates anytime soon. Yeah, I don't know, maybe 5-6 months down the road they could. We'll see. I mean, they've been real wobbly on it. If it comes sooner, we'll deal with it. But I do think if the economy moves along like it is, it's growing, it's improving. We're maybe at 2.2% GDP growth this year. You know, maybe we'll hit three something next year. That's nothing to write home about. That's not extraordinary growth where I think the Federal Reserve is really going to slam on the brakes. At the same time, if you listen to the previous podcast where I talked about interest rates, you do know that given the GDP growth that we currently have, the nominal GDP growth that we currently have, 10-year treasuries should be probably somewhere above 4%, maybe as high as 5%. In actuality, they're like 2.2, 2.3%. So they're significantly lower where you would expect them to be if you looked at long-term historical trends and, you know, basic economics. But that's the world we live in. The Federal Reserve has distorted everything. And so for the time being, it's all Alice in Wonderland. Let's get back to the markets, though. Let's talk a little bit about where we've come over the last 7 weeks. Now, you know, in this podcast, I'm not legally able to give you specific recommendations, and in no way do I ever provide you with advice or any kind of recommendation. This is really just a conversation between me and you, you know, two old friends, and sometimes it's just me sitting here talking to myself. And when I talk out loud, I like to hash out my ideas, why I'm making certain trades, where I think the market's going. But again, in no way is it to be construed as any type of recommendation or advice. Take everything you hear here with a grain of salt. It's just me talking off the top of my head. But if you go back and you listen to these past 7 weeks and you read my blogs over at investablewealth.com, you'll get a general idea of what markets I thought were favored, you know, generally where my portfolio was invested in. I talked basically about five sectors or areas that I moved into back on October 21st when we first went into this uptrend. And then there were three specific stocks that I bought. I never did disclose which of those three stocks that I bought, but I did tell you about the five sectors. Those sectors were the U.S. dollar, the general S&P 500, transportation, utilities, and consumer staples. And I tried to find a fund in consumer staples that focused more on the mid caps. You know, I really wanted to avoid the big multinationals, the big exporters. You know, these are companies that I feel are going to be hurt with the rising dollar. And again, the reason I picked those five industries was because I felt we were in a position, a strong and a strengthening U.S. dollar. We had low energy costs, which were continuing to go down, and we had stable interest rates. And I also chose, with the exception of those three stocks that I picked, I also chose to enter these sectors simply by going into an ETF. That's an exchange-traded fund. We're probably maybe even later this week going to have an episode talking about funds and stocks and bonds. I'm getting some questions from people as to, you know, maybe explain that a little bit better. So we won't do that today, but maybe we'll do that later this week. But I did pick those sector-focused funds. S&P 500 just gave me broad exposure to the market. Although I was concerned about the big multinationals, and although I knew the energy companies would be taking a hit, I also thought that that would be counterbalanced by all the energy consumers and all the consumer products that would benefit from the lower energy costs and the strengthening dollar. And that thought process worked out pretty well. Again, I'm not giving you any specific numbers, not claiming any performance here, just giving you a general look at things. If you go back and, you know, I guess I'll state some historical facts. If you go back and you look at where the S&P was on October 21st when this rally began, and you look at where it is today, it's up approximately 7%, just under 7%. That's not a bad return for a 7 week period. But I'll tell you, we did even better with the transportations. The transportation sector, again, go back and look at those numbers. I'm not claiming any performance standards here, but just historical fact, between October 21st and today, transportation sector up about 12%. They were up, I don't know, more than that initially, maybe even 15% last week. I should have probably taken profits last week on the transportations. They were getting frothy, particularly the airlines. Yeah, but you know, I'm a greedy like anybody else. I held in there until today, but with all this volatility, I actually took profits and took some money off the table in both the S&P 500 and the transportations. And the reason I did that, even though I think the S&P probably still has further to move, I've been talking that, you know, potentially it can hit 2100 by the end of this year if we have a Santa Claus rally. It closed today right around 2060, you know, it had been as high as 2080, almost 2090, I think. So very close to that 2100, it could probably still get there. Again, I'm not making any recommendations. I'm not telling you what to do, but I took some money off. I said, hey, you know, nearly a 7% profit in 7 weeks. I think there's going to be more rotation. I don't know if the energy stocks will fall any further because they've taken a big hit, some of them as much as like 40%. But I am still concerned about the multinationals and the exporters, you know, selling overseas in these weak markets, and particularly when the U.S. dollar is so strong. So I think the big multinationals could drop a lot farther than they are, but I don't know, just my opinion. But again, I'm still overall optimistic with the general direction of the market. Remember, I said today it was very volatile. The S&P varied somewhere around 1.3%. So from its close yesterday to its lowest point today, it was down nearly 1.3%. That's a big gap for a one-day move. So that is concerning, but and this was done in a lot of volume as well. A lot of people sold out. So that's concerning, but at the same time, the S&P ended up closing out flat. The NASDAQ, you know, the big innovation technology stocks, they were actually up over 0.5%. So that's a very good sign. So I continue to be bullish. I didn't take all my money out. And in fact, I bought back in many cases. And I'll tell you about that in a minute. But as far as also selling, I did want to talk about the three stocks, the three specific stocks I was in. I haven't mentioned what they are up to this point. I won't mention it today either. But all three were in the transportation sector. Two of them were trucking companies. One of them was an airline company. Now, I wish I'd have picked all airline companies early on. You heard me several months ago talking about Southwest Airlines. It's done extremely well. That was not the particular stock that I bought. I did buy another American carrier. But the transportations have done extremely well, as I said, up about 12%. Individual airlines have done extremely, extremely well. Trucking companies, not so much. It was really hit or miss there. There's some concern that with trucking companies, there may be some overcapacity. There may be shortage of drivers with not as much oil potentially being hauled over trucking and railing. That affected some of the transportations that were non-airlines related. So how did my individual stocks fare? Well, my three stocks, I picked three. I had two winners, and that's why sometimes it's safer to go with an ETF than it is to go with a specific stock, because there's much more risk with a stock. You can lose a lot more, but at the same time, you can also gain a lot more. So as I said, the transportation sector over these last 7 weeks up about 12%, a little more than 12%. Of my three stocks that I was in that were transportation related, my airline stock was up significantly, up over 30%. Which was extraordinary, right? I wish I'd have put my entire portfolio on that, but 7 weeks ago, I didn't know, or I didn't have the exact 2020 hindsight that I have today, and I could have certainly lost it all. And that was the point of diversifying and splitting up your investments. That's what I encourage you to do. And that's why I say it's really hard to do unless you have a larger portfolio. If you only have, you know, a few thousand dollars to deal with, it's very hard to get diversification. If you have hundreds of thousands of dollars or $1 million, well, that's a good problem to have, because then you have to diversify it. But I'll tell you how that works here in a minute. It can be very profitable for you. So my airline stock up about 30%. And that's averaged out over all the trades I made. Remember, I'm not only dealing with my own money, but also client money. Now let's look at my trucking companies. I did focus on trucking companies because if you remember too, back 7 weeks ago, this is when we were coming out of the Ebola scare. And this is important for you to remember. When I was looking at investing in transportations, I knew that they would fare well. But again, we were just coming out of an Ebola scare. It was the first incidence of Ebola in the U.S. Now, it's panned out to be nothing, but I'm not, I can't predict the future. I didn't know at the time whether it would be good or bad. And I really had no opinion one way or the other. I just knew it was a potential problem. And so rather than focus on airline stocks, which could have gotten hit hard, if there was some kind of an Ebola panic and you couldn't have transcontinental flights, that's why I focused on a carrier that was primarily a U.S.-based carrier with most of their flights, probably 80% of their flights, contained to the United States, and then why the other two stocks that I picked in transportation were trucking companies. Because again, I knew that they would be, you know, very minimally impacted, if maybe not impacted at all if there was some kind of an Ebola problem, and at the same time, they would benefit from lower energy costs. And I further broke that down when I picked these trucking companies. I picked one that was a large cap and one that was a small cap. The small cap, small capitalization stock, it's a smaller company, could be more volatile, could be more risk. But this particular company I'm very familiar with, and then there was the potential there to get a 30, a 40, maybe even a 50% appreciation. But I knew it was risky. So how did it fare out? Well, the big trucking company, it did a little bit less than the overall transportation index. So I got over 10.5%, I'd say, somewhere around that, in that neighborhood, where overall transportation ETF got over 12%. But remember, that's airlines, that's trucking, that's shipping, that's railroads. And again, that was a diversification I wanted. And of course, that was nowhere near what I got out of the airline stock, which was about 30%. But here's the bad news. And then again, this is why we diversify. The small trucking company, the one that I thought that, hey, you know, it was a real shoe-in for 30, 40, maybe 50% appreciation. Well, over 7 weeks, I took a loss on that one. I lost probably 5.5%, maybe higher, maybe closer to 6%. Again, that was a volatile stock. It's still on my watch list. I'll be keeping an eye on it. I've traded in and out of this in the past. I have made money on it. In fact, I think I've traded two or three trades in the last year or so, and I've made money on each of them. But I didn't make it this time. So sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. But again, that's a reason why, and across the board, why I don't put all my money in any one stock. Now, I wish I had put all my money in one sector. It would have been nice just to throw it all into a transportation ETF, because it was up significantly. It was almost a no-brainer that that was going to happen. But again, I was looking to diversify. That's why I went into the consumer staples. I knew that the consumer staples, particularly lower capitalization, mid-cap mid-sized companies that were not big multinationals, they're going to fare well with lower transportation costs, lower energy costs, and they're going to be pretty much unaffected by the stronger dollar in terms of they won't lose exports. They're not going to have instability with exchange rate problems because these companies sell mostly in the United States. So if anything, they'll benefit from a stronger dollar because perhaps some of the raw materials, raw ingredients, machinery, things like that they purchase, some of the commodities, those will be lower, and that's going to help their bottom line. So that's why I did 7 weeks ago diversify, went into the consumer staples. That's why I went into utilities. Think about utilities, particularly things like electric utilities. What do they? They make energy, but at the same time, they buy energy. They're big purchasers of oil in some cases, but definitely huge purchasers of coal and natural gas. Well, those prices are coming down, their overall operating costs, because they also, you know, with all the electric lines, they maintain these big fleets of trucks that run on diesel fuel and things like that. So I knew that the utility companies would benefit from lower energy costs. And at the same time, I knew that they would not be affected by the stronger dollar, again, because, you know, they're not selling electricity outside of the United States. And if they are, it would be, you know, very small markets in Canada or Mexico. But, you know, this is basically something that isn't going to China or Europe. So we don't have to worry about currency devaluations. The utility sector also pays a nice dividend, so again, it was a safe play. It was looking for diversification. I previously had a position in the U.S. dollar because I believed in it, and I maintained that over the last 7 weeks. Again, that is something that wouldn't have performed as well as a general market, but it was a hedge. It was a hedge in case things fell apart. It was a hedge in case the Ebola problem broke out. And it continues to be profitable because, again, I do see the U.S. dollar as maintaining its strength and even appreciating from here. So as far as these other three ETF sectors that I mentioned, I told you what they were, but I didn't tell you how they performed. Consumer staples, the last 7 weeks, up over 7.5%. Utilities, up over 6%. And the U.S. dollar, up over 4%, close to 4.5%. So again, this is something that's a very nice return over the last 7 weeks, particularly when you look at safety factors and you look at, you know, what an ultra safe investment would be like a 10-year treasury. You have to tie your money up for 10 years. And then over the course of the year, you're only getting about 2.2 or 2.3 return in your money. Within the last 7 weeks, just being in the U.S. dollar, I was able to get almost 4.5%. The utilities, which pay a 3% or so, actually over a 3% dividend yearly, just in capital appreciation over the last 7 weeks, that's gone up over 6%, not even factoring in any dividends. So these are very nice returns to achieve. And what I want to point out to you is, although you're too late to get on this current uptrend, is you want to look at that. As an individual investor, you want to look at when the market is trending up and you want to try and get into it early. And when the market's trending down, you want to get out of it or you want to reduce your exposure. Right now, with the volatility today, that's why I made some changes in my portfolio. I didn't think it was time to totally bail, but I did think it was time to take some profits and reallocate. If things keep getting volatile, I'll just sell everything and go to cash. I'm happy to remain in cash and to preserve my profits to reinvest them because there's always another opportunity to buy in. Now, two more things I wanted to point out. One was I wanted to drill down specifically and talk about that one airline stock that I purchased. Okay, now here's a point I want to make about building wealth and being financially independent. I'm constantly harping about how you want to build your wealth, how you want to increase your net worth, how you want to become financially independent. And if you go back and listen to some of the previous episodes, I talk about financially independent being to where you have enough savings where you could cover at least 10 or more years of living expenses, you know, 15, 20 years, where you never had to work for 15 or 20 years because you have enough savings. And I don't want you to be financially independent so that you can be rich and be slothful or be wasteful or be greedy. I want you to do this because you can have personal freedom. And to give you a real world example of how this works out when you're financially independent, I mentioned that I was invested in an airline stock, and that was not only in my clients' accounts with their money and their assets, but also my own personal position. I took a position in an airline stock. It isn't that hard to figure out based on the clues I've given you. You can look it up if you're interested. But the point I want to make, over the last 7 weeks, I put a small portion of my personal investment portfolio into that airline stock. And the gain that I was able to glean today, and again, this is just me talking out loud for educational purposes to explain to you how your wealth works, and once you build money, how your money works for you, and you don't have to work for your money. Well, that gain was just under $26,000. That's in 7 weeks. Imagine that. The household income of the average American is only about $50,000. So in 7 weeks, I was able to make about 6 months' pay. 6 months of what the average American would make, I was able to make in about 7 weeks. And that was just in one stock. And that stock performed extremely well. And maybe I got lucky, but you know what? I'll take luck any day. I'd rather be lucky than be clever. So the point here is, the reason you're saving your money is not just to hoard it away, but you want to build your nest egg so that you can have a critical mass so you can put that money to work for you. So in just a few weeks, in less than 2 months, you can make what the average guy makes in 6 months. And you don't have to break your back or kill yourself to do it. That's what being financially independent is all about. It allows you to free up your time to do the things that you want to do. More importantly, to do the things that you were put on this earth to do. It lets you fulfill your mission. You're not enslaved to your paycheck or to a credit card or to your boss or a job or the government or anybody else. Now, hey, I don't live in a panacea. I know that just because you're financially independent, you're not totally free. Well, there's a lot of shackles on us every day in this country. But let's face it, the more money you have, the more freedom you're going to have, at least the potential for it. Then it's up to you to do something about it. You have no one else to blame at that point but yourself. How are you using your time? Are you putting it to good use? Are you making good time of the work that you do put in? That's the point of being financially independent, so you can be responsible and accountable for your own actions. Now, the last thing I wanted to mention, and I saved this for the end, and this is going to surprise many of you because I've gotten comments that a lot of you think that I'm really focused on the U.S. I'm too much of a U.S. cheerleader. I talk about the strength of the dollar. I talk about how, you know, we have a dominant currency, how I don't see our huge GDP, which, you know, is larger than any other in the world, how I don't see that going away anytime soon. Well, I don't say those things because I'm dogmatic about the United States. I say those things because the way I look at the world right now, that's just a fact and a reality, and I invest based on reality, not on perception or not on the way I want things to be. You see, I invest with the market that I'm in. I use my situational awareness and I apply those things because money goes where it's treated best, and so I invest my money where I think I'm going to get the best return, or consequently where there's the least risk and I have the less chance of losing money. So for those of you that think that I'm only U.S. focused, well, I'll tell you this. I have taken a position, an initial entry position, about a 10% position in a country outside the United States. Now, I do this on the U.S. stock market, so I don't want to confuse anybody. Whenever I invest money, I only invest it through the major exchanges in the United States. I think that's the best system. I think it's the most transparent. I think it's the most honest, and I think it's the least likely for you to be defrauded. So when I talk about investing in a company outside the United States or a country outside the United States, I'm doing it through a United States traded stock or United States traded exchange traded fund. But I did make an investment this week. It was outside the U.S. It's my first position. I may make increasing positions in it or other countries as well as time goes on here. I think things might be looking a little better for some of the countries that haven't recovered as much as the United States. I will tell you this, it wasn't in China, it wasn't in Japan. I think there's problems in both of those areas. It was in Europe, and I don't think Europe is safe overall. You heard me talk many times where I think Southern Europe is just a disaster. The Greeks, the Italians, the Portuguese, the Spaniards, big problems in their economy, big demographic problems, large debt. It's going to be hard for them to get out of the mess they're in. And while Northern Europeans have fared much better, if you look really up in the Scandinavian countries that have relied on oil, you know, because of oil in the North Sea, well, you know what's happened to oil in the last 5 months or so. So those countries I don't think are going to fare as well. But somewhere maybe between the far north and the far south in Europe could be some opportunities. I did take a position. I'm not going to tell you today what it is. But for those of you that are curious, get in contact with me through wellsteading.com at the podcast there. Let me know what country you think it is, and then I'll come back and tell you if you were right. I just want to iterate one more time. In no way am I making recommendations or offering advice, just giving you my opinion, stating some historical facts. Go back and listen to previous podcasts. Look at my articles on investablewealth.com. You can see where I'm coming from, and you can see how I'm trying to put this information together for you to give you encouragement and motivation to build your wealth and then put it to work for you. Don't forget, if you have comments, questions, concerns, or if you want to tell me which country you think I'm investing in, you can do that at wellsteading.com. As always, this is John Pugliano wishing you the very best of returns.